Welcome to the In Your 20s podcast, where we figure out what the f- we're doing in our 20s. Hey guys, what's up? It's your girl Tina with an age, back with another episode of In Your 20s. And guys, when I tell you I am stressed the fuck out right now, as I think we know, I don't remember if I told you guys or not, but I'm moving to New York. Move-in is in 3-4 days by the time that you guys are going to hear this, and I am going through it. But that is not stopping me from giving you guys another episode. Today on the show, I am joined by Emily Rule, and I was so excited to chat with her. This episode is all over the place. Like, I jumped from one topic to the other, but that's just because she's done so much. Emily was scouted and started modeling at the age of 13. From there, she went on to acting and then writing, producing, directing short films, all before her 30s, which is mind-boggling to think about. Emily was an absolute dream. She is so kind, so nice, and I'm just really, really thrilled that we were able to share her story on today's show. We're talking about therapy, her first boyfriend, and how she met her first boyfriend, which is a story that most people only hear about in movies. We also discuss juggling a lot of things at once, having a lot on your plate, and as a result, having to delegate and take away some parts, having to delegate tasks so that way you can have some more mental peace. I'm so excited. Like I said, we're jumping all over the place today, so please bear with me. But without further ado, let's get into it. Hey, Emily.
Hey, girl. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much for coming on. Now, I know I was listing out all the things that you do. I was saying how excited I am for your story. But before we get into that, I've got to ask you, how old are you? And what's a random fun fact that you've learned in your 20s?
I'm 26, and I think a random fun fact that I've learned in my 20s is that like staying home is just as fun as going out.
Okay, I love this because I used to always want to go out. I was like, if it's a Friday, if it's a Saturday, I have to do something with my time. And now I live for the days where I don't have plans and I can just stay at home.
Same.
What's your, in your eyes, the essentials you need for a perfect night at home?
HBO Max, Postmates, pajamas.
Okay.
Like a candle, maybe a hair mask, maybe a face mask, maybe like the little like eye patches. And I think that's it. Yeah.
I'm so surprised that you said HBO Max.
I mean, I also like love The Housewives, so don't get me wrong. Like my taste goes both ways. But HBO Max, I just feel like they have some really, really incredible content. And it tends to be my favorite place to go. I love them all, but like HBO Max. I just finished Winning Time, which is really amazing about the Lakers. I finished Staircase. There's a whole bunch of different things. And I'm reading currently Tinderbox, which is the story of HBO. So I've been on like a little HBO.
Okay. It's all adding up. And I also, it makes complete sense. I think they're the most nominated like streaming platform for the Emmys. Everyone talks about them. Like Euphoria is the most live tweeted show, I think, in like Twitter history. They've got some really like high stats, but also the content speaks for itself.
I think so too.
Because everyone's hooked. And we are totally going to get into that because I know it's like, this is your realm. Film and whatnot is your realm. But before we talk about what you're currently doing, let's, you know, take a step back, rewind a little bit. You've been working since the age of 13. So since working from such a young age, how do you think that's affected you back then and also now in your 20s?
I mean, I think back then I didn't really realize how it affected me because I was so young. I think that I was always more mature than everybody around me, and I kind of grew up around adults. So to then work around adults didn't really feel like a huge transition. I definitely have noticed now, like, I never really developed hobbies or extracurricular activities because working was my life, and it still is. Like, now I have a balance, and I have friends and a boyfriend and things like that, but I don't really do things that aren't connected to my work in some way. Like even if I go to a museum, like I'm constantly trying to be inspired to kind of push myself towards larger goals that I have. I don't really do things that I'm bad at, which can be a good and a bad thing. Like I think it's worth trying things that you're not great at. I think it affected how, you know, I developed friendships because I didn't really have any friendships from back home. And then I was working and everybody around me was older. So my friends are much older than me. Yeah, I think the way that I socialize, like there were some parts of it that were a little bit like a sense of arrested development just because I didn't go to regular high school. My dating experience has also been interesting. I met my first boyfriend on a plane. My first kiss was on set. When you start modeling at such a young age, it affects how you relate to your body. And I think having your whole adolescence photographed is a very odd experience. And I think that, like, I'm working on releasing a lot of hypercriticism towards myself and just what I look like. It's nice now that, like, that's not my only talent. I think that has helped quite a bit. But it's definitely shaped me and who I am, for sure.
We have so much to unpack just from that alone.
You sound like my therapist.
For starters, I can totally relate to you, like, not necessarily having hobbies because everything that you do in some way connects to your career and your work ethic. This podcast, for example, was meant to be, quote unquote, a hobby.
Uh-huh.
So in the back of my head, saying to myself, I want to be a host for TV shows, red carpets one day. So yeah, it's like fun that I can interview people, but also this is great because I can show, you know, my bosses and whoever's looking for talent, like, this is what I've done and I've done it by myself. Yeah. Granted, now I have a team with me. But I 1000% relate to that. Is there a time where you're ever like, okay, this hobby is now turning too much into my career? Have you ever been able to, like, pull back, or do you just let it guide you?
It's more just, I just draw, like, boundaries. Like, I try to be really good about not working on the weekends. But the weekends are, like, my reading and movie time, which still then is, like, somehow connected, right? And I think that I have a production company called Public School Pictures, and I have team members, and my last end of day call with the last team member is at 6. And so after 6, it's like, okay, this is the boundary. I still check my emails, but I don't, like, respond to them, which I don't know, like, I think that's kind of an oxymoron. But at 6, it's like, okay, this is now my personal time, and this is my time for my friends or my relationships, or this is the time that I focus on those other things that have to fill up my cup. Because I have had moments in my life, especially when I was younger, where I would have career successes, but then still feel so empty because the other parts of the pie chart of happiness were not filled up. So it's more just, like, creating boundaries in time. And, like, for me, even just going for a drive on a Sunday feels like an act of self-care. Not that it's meaningless, but it's not, there's no intention other than, like, to be mindful. So little things like that I try to do.
1000%. And you also did hit on that you met your first boyfriend on a plane.
I did.
That, the definition of a meet cute, if I've ever heard one. Can you please tell us the story? I'm so intrigued.
So I was modeling in New York, but I'm from Dallas originally. And he was from New York, going to college very close to where my mom lived in Dallas. And I think we were both on the flight from Dallas to New York, but I actually remember seeing him. Like, I remember the first time I saw him, and I remember the gate too. And I, like, saw him hanging out before everybody boarded. And, like, there's generally not that many hot people on your flight, so you kind of can, like, check the ones that are.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking how cute he was. And he was standing next to, like, there was, like, a Dallas Cowboys pro shop in the airport. And I remember him, like, hanging out. And then we boarded. And I was going back to New York. I think I had come home to visit my mom. And I was going back to New York to work. And there was, like, a Beyonce concert at the Barclays Center that was, like, very important and I was excited about. And we board the plane and we sit next to each other. But, like, for the first hour, he says nothing, not a word. And then he's reading some, like, big book. I don't remember what it was. And I remember I, like, complimented on the book. I'd never read this fucking book. I just needed an in, you know? Again, yeah. I didn't go to high school, so there wasn't a whole lot on the menu for me. So, like, me seeing a cute boy was like, oh, wow, like, you're, like, a rare species. And we, like, exchanged numbers. And then I didn't see him again for, like, 6 weeks, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He was, like, breaking up with his girlfriend to then go on dates with me. Well, so breaks up with his girlfriend. I don't know this. I just know I don't hear 6 weeks.
Yeah. You just saw a cute guy on the plane reading a book that you've never read.
I gave him my number, but then I just kind of forgot about it. And then I went back to Texas for the summer for a couple of months, and he hit me up. We hung out. It was, like, 3 or 4 months total. And then I flew to LA to do, like, a 6-week modeling contract.
Mm-hmm.
And he broke up with me the next day. And I was, like, so heartbroken. Although I will tell you, like, 2 years ago, I called him and told him, like, how he made my 17-year-old self feel. And he was, like, very apologetic and said he regretted it. And then I was, like, his drunk call for a good, like, 4 years after that. But now we still follow each other on Instagram. God bless. But yeah, that was my first boyfriend. Yeah.
That is such a whirlwind. I was like, oh, here we go, here we go. And then I hear the breakup and I'm like, oh no.
I broke, but I remember our first date and like, I didn't know what to do. I'd just seen movies. So like, I was like, what's your biggest fear? As like, we're playing mini putt-putt. And I was like, I don't know if I want anything serious, you know? Cause I was just like trying to mimic everything I'd seen on television. And I remember I wasn't used to like living with my mom, like since staying with her, I was used to the sense of freedom. So like, I would like sneak in at night and I'd come home with hickeys. And I would try to tell her that I had an allergic reaction and she'd tell me to like cut the shit. And she showed me how to like scratch it off with a quarter. It was like my version of high school, I guess, in a way. And it was that kind of romance. And he's very sweet. And I think that he just was a kid growing up too. But I think it was a sweet first one. It ended with not the greatest bang, so to speak, for lack of a better word. But I got it out of the way and then I moved on and bigger and better things. So
I'm so shocked. Also, I'm not even surprised at the fact that you said like he was constantly hitting you up and being, you were his designated drunk call.
Yes. Because he left me to go back to the ex-girlfriend that he broke up with to date me.
They're not together now.
No. I think he's had a few rounds of girlfriends since then. I don't think they're still together. But yeah.
You know, I have tried many times on this podcast to understand the male brain. And for all my male listeners, while I do love you, you guys are just so complex. You're complex, but you're also predictable, you know?
Listen, I'm not a therapist, but I've had a lot of therapy. And I think that my psychoanalysis of that is like, I just think he didn't want to be alone. And I think I left and he didn't know when I was coming back. He like is someone who needed someone and I was gone. So he needed to fill that void.
Yeah, definitely. And since you did bring up that you've done a lot of therapy, when did you start therapy? Were you doing it while you were modeling as a teen?
No, I should have. No, the first therapy session I went to was like when I was 17 and it was court ordered because my parents got divorced and I like walked out and I was not receptive at all. And I like met a few therapists, nobody I really like connected with. I think it's truly like dating. You have to find your person. Mm-hmm. In therapy. It's actually probably the most intimate relationship I have because she knows everything about me. But I started therapy with my current therapist 3 years ago, almost four. And it was my first serious relationship that I had gotten out of. And it was kind of the relationship where it's like good people, bad for each other. Mm-hmm. She's actually his therapist. And so when we were breaking up, I was like, can I have your therapist? Because nobody will understand you better. And now I can process all of these things that have happened. And now I've held on to her and now she's the therapist to a few of my family members and friends. Like we all love her. She's amazing. Yeah.
Does your ex-boyfriend also still use her?
Yeah.
That is so interesting to me. I feel as if I don't hear that very often.
I mean, own show. I should do a show.
You really
that.
Should. Because yeah. I was going to say you've been with her for, like you said, three, almost 4 years. So she must have been really critical in helping you get through that breakup and that time in your life as well.
Yeah, that was a relationship where, you know, I lost myself and we both like had some traumatic events happen very quickly at the beginning of the relationship. So it was a trauma bond situation and we were really toxic for each other. But I also think we became addicted to each other. And so there was a lot of picking myself back up that I had to do that she really helped with. And then just helping me rework my inner monologue and how I talk to myself and all of the like conditioning that I had absorbed from my parents, from modeling, just from my life. And she's amazing. I talk to her once or twice a week. And it's really incredible to have someone who I think like knows all of the good and the bad. But like, I know she still loves me. Do you know what I mean? That's a special thing to be able to be like, you know, everybody's fucking pissing me off today and fuck this and fuck that. And I hate this, but like, it's still a safe space and it doesn't change my value as a person. And that was such an incredible lesson that she taught me for sure. Because I used to think that I had to like be perfect. And she's taught me that like, the imperfections are really the lovable parts. So
that's beautiful. And since you also mentioned you were like having to pick up these pieces. So was the breakup the time where you were like, okay, now it's time for me to get a therapist? Or were you also thinking about getting a therapist beforehand? Like what was that push? Because some people take years and years where they're thinking about it, but they don't actually go to therapy.
Yeah, I think for me, again, like I had been in and out. Mm. Like I've been in and out. I've never consistent with it. I'd experienced it, but not in the same way that I experience it with like my therapist, who's a big proponent of like Thich Nhat Hanh and Eckhart Tolle and has like a very holistic approach. And like isn't too dogmatic about anything, which is really great. And she's like in her 70s. And I love that she has this life experience and she's been married forever. And I know her kids personally and they're not that fucked up. So like I trust everything she has to say. And her kids are in show business. So like she just gets me.
Yeah.
I was definitely not thinking about it. I definitely should have been thinking about it. I think I was just at such a rock bottom that to me, it was less even about me going through therapy and me just trying to like understand him. When then we broke up, like there was still a part of me that thought we might get back together. And so I think I thought that, well, if I can understand him, then I can make this work. That was the initial in, which isn't healthy, but it worked. And then I just stuck. And now she's met various boyfriends of mine. She's been a part of everything. And I love her dearly. And it's really amazing to have somebody who knows more than you and who's lived the life and accepting of all of you. I think that's a great gift.
That is a great gift. And now you have me wanting to call my therapist because I've ghosted her for about 2 months. Even I keep saying, I'm like, oh, I'm going to call her. And then I have not, but you are inspiring me to like reach back out. And I just love that. I want us to switch gears for a second. I do want to go back to therapy, but what we were saying earlier, you have worked a lot. You know, you've been working since you were 13. You didn't go to college, correct?
I did not. I did apply and I did get in, and then I told everybody that I wasn't going to do something to make other people happy. So I did have like a like rebellious stance, but...
As you should. Go off. So once you were like, okay, I'm taking this stand. I don't want to go to college. What was next for you?
Oh, acting, which was, I mean, I think I had like just booked Newness, which is a film directed by Drake Dreamus on Netflix, which was like my second audition ever. I did not even have an agent at the time. So it set me up with a lot of false expectations of how this all was going to work out. I was like, oh, this is easy. I got this. It's not how that works. So I think I definitely had a false sense of confidence, but I believe it was around that time and like applied to Penn State. I was going to go to business school. They had a really great online business school. There was no way I could like go live in a dorm and go backwards and do all of that. But I told my mom that it wasn't what made me happy and I wasn't going to do something to make somebody else happy. And I wanted to act. And I think that it really lit a fire under my ass, so to speak, to make the acting work, which was good and bad. Like there was a lot of pressure and auditions became really stressful. And it was actually maybe to my detriment that I put so much pressure on myself. And now I stopped auditioning when I was making Blue Moon. And so for the past year and a half or so, and the last couple of weeks have reintegrated myself into auditioning. And now having so many other things going on and my entire self-worth not being on this audition, they're actually so much better. And I don't get this wave of panic every time I get one. And it's like, okay, if they don't cast me in this, this, and this, I'll just write something for myself and I'll keep going. This isn't define me. And at the time I didn't have that awareness, and that was the gift of having the kind of sense of solidarity that COVID provided and the sense of reflection to be able to start just making my own stuff.
That's definitely the benefit of having different talents and skills, where it's like you can put your eggs in multiple baskets, like you were saying, which is so important. And before we get more into the other baskets that you have, I want to ask you, what was your mom's reaction once you were like, I'm not going to college? And also, what was her reaction as you were trying to do more and more of these auditions?
It's always been very supportive, but I think it is a career path where there is no straight line and you're not working your way up a ladder. And she's a lawyer, so there is a very straight line to that career path. And so I think that there's always maybe been a little tinge of fear, but it hasn't taken away from her kind of unwavering support. And she's been really, really incredible. And now I feel like, you know, it's all paid off and now it's all working out, I feel like, which my mom's been incredibly supportive from the beginning.
That's amazing. Now, you have referenced Blue Moon, so we definitely need to talk about it. Blue Moon was your production, directorial, and writing debut.
Yeah.
That's a lot of credits.
Thanks.
This film, it premiered in New York, right? Yes. News Fest in New York back in October of 2021.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, what year?
Okay.
Yeah. News Fest, October 21, Blue Moon premiered, which is great.
Please dive deep with us about this experience and your baby. It's your first work baby.
It is my first baby. Okay, so we want to like backtrack to February of 2021. I had gotten a little restless, I think, creatively. I had created my own kind of like acting curriculum. So I was reading Stanislavski and taking acting lessons with Lena Jorgis at Nancy Banks Studio, who's amazing. And I just got into a place where I realized my entire professional career had been waiting on somebody to pick me. That was it. And I was so over it. And I was also like so over being on camera and so over auditioning. And I think really it was a way for me to tell my agents that I wanted to stop auditioning so I could just go make this other thing. Like, it was almost an excuse in a way. Like, is how it started. And I, you know, I'd always found love to be the universal kind of thread between us all. And I've been really intrigued by this idea of like love in a single night and existing within a snow globe with somebody. And then I met Mr. Blue Moon, who is inspired the film. We went on a handful of dates. And then he friend zoned me on the third date. However, we're still friends and he's in a few of my other things.
So he knows that the movie is about him.
Yes.
Okay.
He does know it's about him. Well, it's about my experiences, but then also one of my best friends is queer and had just started dating women and expressed how she felt underrepresented in media. And so I decided to make it both of our stories. And she was very instrumental and very helpful because I wanted those characters to feel very authentic. Both the actors in the film are queer and their real life stories are a part of the script. So it was this beautiful kind of mixture of two worlds coming together. But like on my date with Mr. Blue Moon, I have a vintage Mustang and we took my Mustang to this spot up the coast. And Blue Moon, they take this old car to Mulholland. So there were like some parallels. But if anything, he made me feel what I wanted the audience to feel. And that was something that I wanted to bottle and recreate. And that was the biggest thing from him. And that inspired everything. I mean, the idea was only supposed to be 3 minutes long. I think we were just going to shoot the sex scene and call it Little Spoon. And then I went on the dates and I'm like, oh, we should expand this out. Like, who are these people? And then it turned into Blue Moon because we found the tagline, which is, if you believe in magic, once in a blue moon, you might just find it. And then I decided to write dialogue. There was no dialogue at the beginning. I was like, we're just improv it. And then I wrote dialogue and then it just like grew and grew and grew and grew and grew upon itself. And now, you know, we're adapting it into a feature. We have a writer on board. Blue Moon will be coming to a big screen near you probably in the next 2 years. So it is kind of wild to see this little seed of something really grow and expand and then turn into my purpose, I truly believe, and my passion. And after Blue Moon, when we're editing that, I wrote the proof of concept for 13 Stepping, which we shot as like a short film, but we're also developing into a TV show. And then I started my company. And now I just wrote another short called Pretty Sad. That's actually completely silent, which will be a really fun acting test. I'm executive producing some other projects. We have a whole like merch line coming out. There's so much going on. But yeah, Blue Moon is the little engine that could.
Little engine that could, that has created just like this huge, I don't want to use the word conglomerate, but words are escaping me right now, but it's creating all these new and different opportunities for you. And then at times, and I'm not trying to speak for you, but do you ever, with all those things on your plate, do you ever feel overwhelmed or overstretched where you're like, I just need things to stop for like a minute?
Hell yeah, I get overwhelmed. I get really overwhelmed sometimes. In those moments, I have learned how to delegate and I have an amazing team of people that I work with. I think when the first audition came back in, I had a full breakdown. Like, I don't know if I could do this. Like, I just had so much rejection that I had some sort of PTSD response. And I got on the phone with Zach Parker, who's my head of development. And he's like, no, you can do this. Like, if we need to, we'll find somebody who can come to you and help you take them. And now it's all worked out. But I had a moment of like, I don't know if I can do all of the things. And then my mom is an entrepreneur and she's a lawyer. She's been a great kind of sounding board. And she said something to me recently where I don't have to be everything every day. And that was a big kind of mind-blowing experience. I do get overwhelmed, but I also love it. And it's interesting because like the days will go by really quickly and there's always something going. And like, you know, while I'm doing this right now, my team is doing a million other things that I'll be filled into as soon as I get off this podcast. And it'll be kind of organized chaos. And then when it ends, it's 6. And I sit in my room and like turn on HBO. I'm like, oh my God, no one loves me. What am I doing? Like, you know, I have the exact opposite response. So it's interesting. I just try to find a balance. And I love what I do so much that definitely not complaining. But yes, I get overwhelmed in moments for sure.
Oh, I feel like everyone, even if they love their job, like I love my job, but there are times where I will say to my roommate, oh my gosh, I could quit right now and be totally okay. Even though I wouldn't be okay. But I'm like, I just need a break from something that you love. And like you said, you do delegate things to your team. So that way it's not all on you. And like you have these people that you can lean on. Now, my next question, as someone who I personally am type A. So, and I love to know everything. How do you pick and choose what you give away to your team and what things that you are like, okay, I'm going to go through this myself because I want to make sure it's quote unquote perfect.
I mean, so here we go. I think there are things that like I personally don't have to do. I mean, I have a head of development. His name is Zach. And I think I brought him up a little bit earlier. And he's in charge of developing the projects on our slate. So he's reaching out to writers, 13 Stepping. He has two interns that he delegates other things to. Everything gets sifted down before it comes to me. So if it's writers we're meeting with, like they've already gone through a few rounds of auditions, so to speak, or through edits. And it's I'm very much like the last person on the train to know everything because I'm on like a need to know, right? And I trust them to do their jobs. And then I have Anna Patino, who is like my visual production manager, and she oversees social media, merch, design, website, anything to do with graphics. And so generally when we're having a call regarding social media or graphics, like I'm on the first call and I'm on the last call. And I trust her. She knows my aesthetic enough to make little edits. So when it comes to design stuff, it's like that. I'm very, very involved when it comes to all of it. But I try to stay out of the middle, if that makes any sense. I really trust her aesthetic. And when I explain something about how I want something to look, she's very much on it. And then I have like my end of day updates with everybody every night. So I have like 15 to 20 to 30 minutes block out every day. Everything's delegated during the day. And then we check in the evenings. And that's how I like time block my time. So I'm not constantly checking in with people. I also think it gives people space to like actually do their job. And then we have check-ins, and that's when everything's run by me. Anna and I work side by side during the day. So maybe every couple of hours, be like, okay, do you need me for anything? Do I need to approve anything? And she'll show me all of those things. And then we have like an accounting department that I check in with consistently. And then like Anna is now getting an intern because she could use some help. There's a whole bunch of things going on, but it's like, if I don't need to be doing it, that I'm not. I'm just on the last round of everything. So everything's been sifted out.
Oh, it makes complete sense, especially because there's so many moving parts and you are one person. You can't do it all.
Right. And I think the team's been really great. Like when I have auditions or things like this, everybody does a really great job of keeping the ship going. And I did have that thought, like I just had an audition for a show that I would love to be on. And I was like, okay, if I get this job, like I'm going to be working on a set all day. And this ship has to run itself. And I have to be able to just check in for an hour every day. So right now it is really about building those systems and those structures so that it can be self-running while I am working, whether it's on my own show and 13 Stepping when that gets picked up or somebody else's. It should be a self-serving mechanism that I can just check in with. The theme of my life right now is just building structures and systems so that way that can happen.
What is something you wish you told yourself or something you wish you knew right before you were about to start this production company with all the knowledge that you have now?
I think you're only as good as your team. And I think that I really learned that like Anna was hired as my assistant and now she was too good at being my assistant that she something else. She still like helps me with some stuff. And then I have Jackie Wittish who was like slid into my DMs to ask me about Blue Moon and then became a PA on 13 Stepping and then became my assistant. She's also like a production manager, but she's also head of outreach for the company. Everybody plays multiple roles. But I think figuring out like what somebody is best at and how they work best. So like some of the team members are best remotely because that's just how they are. Anna and I work really great side by side. Zach comes in when we have meetings, but he's a free bird that needs to fly. Do you know what I mean? So it's like customizing things to different people. And like when things come in, because there was no fucking structure to any of this, like I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. But now it's like everybody has their own department that's been curated to the things that they're best at. Do you know what I mean? And so I think figuring that out was really interesting. I remember when I hired Anna, I was like, I need to do like 3 hours a day, a couple of days a week. And now she works like 10 hours, you know, multiple days, 5 days at least a week. And she's amazing. So I think just curating the jobs almost around the people in a way, because I think the few things that you can't buy are like loyalty and kindness. And when I have those two things, I will hold on to them forever. So
as someone who's very bad at vetting people, whether it's at work, whether it's in relationships, I'm just very bad at it. But with the way that you're talking, one, you sound like an incredible boss. This is a very like in tune boss, which is so nice and so refreshing. But it's also the fact that, you know, when you hear people talking about their passions and you hear all of the work that you guys are doing, and just to know that it's all going to amount to something so great, you're going to be able to see and watch and feel and envision. It's like, wow, because of the great team that you have created, you know that the end result is going to be even better than you've probably ever imagined.
1,000%. And it feels very much like a sport team. Like we're in this together. We have a cowbell that's like our accomplishment bell that we ring every time we have an accomplishment. But I think we're all doing it for the greater good of public school pictures. And we all really just want to make incredible content. And, you know, the next short that I'm going to do, like, I'll have Zach produce it and have my other two team members, Jackie and Anna, be assistant producers. And so everybody kind of gets to learn the different jobs and oversee different things, because I don't know, in 5 years, Anna might be head of a different department and Jackie might be doing something else. But I still want them in the PSP family, because, again, it's like loyalty and kindness and a work ethic. Like those are just the hardest things to find. And when you find them, you hold on to them. And I learned that from my mom. She has people that have been working for her for over 20 years. And that was something that she really instilled for me to look for. And I think we're all such different people, but we come together. And I miss the days that I'm not with them. I remember like the 4th of July, it was a 3-day weekend. And like 2 days I can handle, but the third day I was like, what's going on, everybody? Like, I miss y'all. Like, what's happening? Like, it's great. We are going, I have like PSP field trips, like public school picture field trips. So like, we're all going to the Academy Museum on Saturday together. We'll go to screenings together. Like, we do things outside of the office. We're doing a retreat in Joshua Tree at the end of August.
That's going to be so fun. I'm so jealous.
Yeah, I'm really excited. So I think just building that community is really important, because it's a hard thing. And like, it's really hard to get anything made, you know? And there's fires every day and nothing is a straight line. So I'm very appreciative for them, and I couldn't do this without them. And they are very significant to me. So.
That's amazing. And I know if they're like listening to this, I mean, personally, I would be crying right now. I'd be crying because I'm like, you can feel the love.
Oh, 1,000%. I love when like they comment on my Instagram posts. Like it makes me feel so loved. So I'll make sure that they listen to this. Jackie, I'll send it to them.
Amazing. And speaking of community, so this industry, it's an intense one, you know, like there are constantly people are trying to mooch, they're trying to get ahead. You don't know necessarily if you can trust some people. So with all of this, how do you get through the hurdles when, let's say, someone in whatever capacity tries to tell you no?
Which happens like every day, whether it's, you know, for a music license or it has to do with a writer. I think I just find no's motivating more than anything. And I just find, rather than no's being a roadblock, it's just like a reroute, you know? And I want it so badly. Like, I just want it at me so badly that like nobody can really tell me otherwise. And I think when you want something as badly as I do, when you just believe in something with all of your being, everybody else can kind of fuck off, so to speak, you know? And I'll figure it out. If we listen to all the no's in our life, nothing would ever get done. Nothing great would ever happen.
Straight facts with that. I'm like, you guys can't see, but I'm nodding my head. Like, yes, yes. I don't think I've stopped nodding this entire conversation. And there was another question I wanted to ask you, and it totally escaped me. So give me like 2 seconds. Oh, I remember it. I was going to ask as a follow-up to that. Okay, so someone says no, and you're like, I'm going to reroute. I'm going to figure out a way to get this to a yes. If it's not with this person, maybe it'll be with someone else. Another thing is that, and this is with every industry, guys, people love to talk. They try to bring you down. And for Emily, with you, especially being a female in this industry, where females just aren't given the same respect, even though we should be given the same respect, how do you block out the noise to just keep your eyes on the prize? Because, yeah, you've got the motivation, but it's like, are there any tactical ways that you're like, okay, nope, I'm going to like close out of my Instagram app and that's it for the day?
Yeah, I mean, I think Instagram can be disruptive, even if like I'm lucky that I'm not at a place where like people are writing mean things about me. I'm in this really happy like middle earth where nobody cares enough to like tell me I'm fat. But I think that it can also be kind of insidious in other ways, social media at least. I think for me, there are some meetings we've set up with like people I knew, and I mean with men that I knew, and I felt the need to have Zach there with me. And then I realized I don't feel like I can be alone in a room with this person. Like, we're not working with them. That's the metric. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I think also like all of my friends are people I've known before this. So nothing's really changed. And I think that I'm also dating somebody in the industry, so that makes it really nice that he's older than me and has been through it longer than I have. So to have somebody to bounce things off of. But I think just having moments throughout the day where like you just check in and I just realize how lucky I am to be living my dream, really. And that whatever noise comes, I can kind of swat it away because it's definitely worth the magic that I get to feel and the magic that I get to create every day coming to work. Like, I love coming to work. It makes me so happy. So
that is wonderful. And it goes back to just practicing gratitude.
Yeah.
Taking those little moments here and there to just be like, wow, I'm in this space right now where 5, 10, however many years ago, I couldn't even imagine it.
Exactly.
It's so funny for me when I was in my, what show was it? My One Tree Hill phase. I think this was last year. Uh-huh. And I'm just binging. It's maybe 2 a.m. and I'm just watching because I was like, yeah, I've got work, but I still want to watch this. And I see, I forget, Mouth was his nickname on the show. He's like interviewing people and someone goes, oh, what's that? And he goes, oh, I'm starting a podcast.
Oh, wow.
And I had to take a pause because I think I was also in this time frame or the headspace where I was very close to having a breakdown. And I just started sobbing and crying, not because I was like, wait, podcasts have been around for that long. But to me, that was a sign like, girl, podcasts were around then. They're around now. They're getting even bigger than it was whenever One Tree Hill was around. What, like a decade ago is when it maybe started. And it's those moments where I'm like, wow, I'm really doing the thing. And taking a step back to just look at all you've accomplished. Practicing gratitude, we all need to do a bit more of, honestly.
I think so. And I think that's a true kind of key to happiness. But I love how kismet your story is. That's amazing.
I was like, the universe, I don't know if you're a universe kind of person. I am. And I always feel like
I'm a universe kind of person. I think you got to be a little bit in order to like get through the tough shit. You got to be a universe kind of person.
Exactly. And coincidences in my mind happen for a reason.
Exactly. And you find a reason if you don't have one.
And that's the exact reason why I'm convinced one guy that I keep running into in all of New York when my ass is still living in Jersey, I'm like, we're going to get married because I run into him every time I go out. He's also Canadian. So that means I could possibly get dual citizenship, and which I'd be so down for. Well, Emily, I want to say thank you so, so much for coming on the show. You've been nothing but an absolute pleasure. And I've loved hearing your story. I know the In Your 20s community will as well. Before we wrap up, of course, I want you to plug where people can find you, PSP, and everything. But if there's something that we didn't get to today, or if there's a piece of advice you have for people in their 20s, now's the time to do so.
Piece of advice for people in their 20s is to tell the people that you love them, and make them know that you appreciate them. That's very important because that's how you build community. And I think that's one of the things that I realized that I needed as much as I needed water and air and food in my 20s. I didn't know this at the start. As far as finding me, I'm at Emily Rule on Instagram. And you can go to at Public School Pictures on Instagram. You can watch Blue Moon on publicschoolpictures.com, bluemoontheshort.com. You can see the trailer for 13 Stepping on publicschoolpictures.com and on 13stepping.com. But publicschoolpictures.com is kind of the hub for all things PSP. So, and we're dropping our merch collection probably in like 3 months. So,
hey, okay. We will definitely be checking in and tuning in for that. And guys, I'm going to have all of Emily's handles, links, anywhere that you can find her. I'm going to have them in the show notes, so go check them out. Emily, again, thank you so much for coming on. And guys,
I'm so glad that this is what you're doing. You're
thank
great.
Thank you so much. And guys, thank you so much again for listening. Wow, I'm practicing so much gratitude right now.
Practicing what we preach.
Who knows? Maybe I'll cry after this. just because of happy tears, guys, happy tears. But thank you guys for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, review it. Follow us on Instagram at inyour20s. That's 20s with a Y-S, not an I-E-S. My name's Tina with an H, and I'll catch you next Wednesday.